Welcome to the March updates for the Department of Family, Community, and Preventive Medicine at the University of Arizona College of Medicine, Phoenix. I'm Shari Veris. I'm the chair for the Family Medicine Department. A few times a year, we've committed to doing an asynchronous recorded update in lieu of a regular department meeting. And for March, we've attempted to do this all audio to make it convenient so you can listen to it in your car or anywhere that's convenient for you. So hopefully you like it. We will tell you about some upcoming events for our department. We will have some updates from the graduate medical education programs and the undergraduate medical education programs, a research update, and some clinical updates. First, a few updates from me. This past January, We hosted a primary care workforce summit at the U of A College of Medicine Phoenix in partnership with other primary care department chairs and residency programs across the state. We had planned for about 30 or 40 people and ended up with 90. There were multiple stakeholders and interested parties who seemed to truly care about the future of Arizona's primary care workforce, and spent the day thinking and planning around this. We had included some consultants who were experts in how GME is funded and had brought some of the ideas and successes from some of our neighboring states into that discussion. Overall, it was a success and the kind of work that needs to be done in Arizona. We have our annual Family Medicine Department Dinner and Awards scheduled for May 9th at the University Club in Phoenix at 6 p.m. And we hope to see you there. We'll have an email going out and RSVPs for that. We have a big enough venue that we can accommodate whoever wants to attend that in our department. We'd love to see you there. That's it for my updates. Our first guest is Dr. Leah Hillier. She's going to tell you about some exciting upcoming events.
There are three things that I think are probably important for people to know about right now. The first is the Arizona Academic Family Medicine Innovation Conference, or AFMIC, is happening on Friday, April the 4th. This is our third year doing it. We have a keynote speaker coming in from the University of New Mexico named Nancy Pandy. She's a family doc who does a lot of research. Very cool person. I'm excited to hear what she has to say. And then we also have a few other things happening that day, a panel discussion about kind of making research and scholarship part of family medicine careers. And then we're really excited. We're working with the AZAFP to host a residency fair reception for medical students. So it's going to be a great day. We're doing that down at Creighton University again. If you go to the family medicine website for UACOMP, University of Arizona College of Medicine, Phoenix, there is a link to the AFMIC registration there that has the full agenda. We're still accepting poster and project submissions, but my guess is by the time this goes out, we might have closed that. That closes on March the 7th.
So go to the family medicine website, the Department Family Community Preventive Medicine website, then they can register for the conference there.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you Google search University of Arizona College of Medicine Phoenix Family Medicine, you'll get our homepage. And on the left side, if you scroll down to the bottom, there's an AFMIC, A-A-F-M-I-C link there, and that takes you to all the information.
Fabulous. What if they just want to come for the residency fair?
Yeah, so the residency fair, which is happening at 3 p.m., is primarily aimed at medical students. It's a recruitment fair for residency programs that allows medical students to kind of feel out the different residency programs in the state and connect with faculty from those programs. But certainly other faculty are welcome to join us for that if they'd like to.
Super. What do you think is the best way for us to get more medical students to come to that, to take advantage of that residency fair?
So we're working through sort of our academic collaborative in the state, which I can tell you more about in a second, to make sure that that gets distributed widely to medical learners at, you know, various institutions training people in Arizona.
Great. What other updates do you have? You have a couple of things.
Yeah. So I think the most exciting thing aside from AFMIC is we are finally launching an in-person meeting for the residency learning collaborative that we've been working on putting together over the last year. Some people may or may not know the ACGME standards that came out most recently for graduate medical education recommended integration of what are called residency learning networks or residency learning collaboratives in our training. And those can look a lot of different ways, but we don't have one in Arizona yet, or we didn't when this started. So we applied for a little grant from the ABFM and we got it, which allowed us to do some preliminary work on this. I was so grateful to so many family medicine leaders in the state who gave me their time to talk about kind of what this could look like and what the best way to do it would be. And we were able to put together a report back to the ABFM. They were very positive about our work, and they've actually just provided another grant to us to do work in this space. So the Residency Learning Collaborative is a group of residency leaders from, you know, every family medicine residency across the state has been invited. And we're looking at how we can all sort of work together to elevate the specialty in the state and support each other so that, you know, we're all rowing in the same direction and creating shared resources and collaborating whenever we can. And that kind of supports our medical learners and supports our entire specialty in the state of Arizona. So we are holding our first in-person meeting the day before AFMIC on Thursday, April the 3rd for residency faculty. And we'll be talking about the grant that we just got from the ABFM, which is focused around increasing continuity in our residency clinics. But we're also going to talk about kind of the general agenda and kind of administrative structure, governance structure moving forward for this residency learning collaborative that we're launching.
Wow, that's exciting.
Yeah, it's great. It's very exciting.
Are you finding the time to do all this?
We'll sleep when we're dead, right? The last thing I'll draw attention to, which I think is also great about this, is because we're so focused on making sure that other programs and other family docs who aren't in Phoenix can be part of these things, we have sort of launched the events on April 3rd and 4th right before the Arizona Academy of Family Physicians is holding their ACE conference. So that's the annual clinical education conference. They're doing that April 5th and 6th at Creighton Medical School. And that's a really broad CME event for family docs and a great way to network. So that's my little plug, which is all of these things are happening together. And, you know, we're excited to get the whole family community, family medicine community in the state kind of in the same place to think about some big issues together.
I just thought of something that you had also mentioned. There's a practice-based research network meeting that's incorporated into all this.
Yeah. So we've been really lucky as Dr. Spielberg has joined our team as our vice chair of research and, you know, working with Tucson's vice chair of research. We've been, collaborating across the state and actually into New Mexico as well to talk about launching a practice-based research network or a PBRN. And this has been sort of slowly coming together over the last couple of years. Practice-based research networks are focused on allowing research to actually happen in the medical environments where it's going to be used. So out typically in community-based primary care practices. And so we've been kind of working on putting some of these projects together, implementing things locally where we're working across a network of practices to implement research. So we're having a smaller meeting with some interested parties on that Friday morning before the conference and kind of talking about how we're going to roll this out more broadly across the state of Arizona and in collaboration with New Mexico.
Really exciting work. Leah, I really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. We're excited to see everybody in April.
Next up, we have GME Updates with Dr. Steve Brown, Program Director for Banner University Phoenix, Dr. Roberta Matern, Program Director for BUMCP Payson, and Dr. Jacob Anderson, PD for our new Banner Desert Program.
Hey, this is Steve with an update from the Phoenix Residency Program. Of course, March is match month, so I'll let you know how we're all feeling on March 21st. I want to talk about two quick things, both advocacy and scholarly activity that our program is involved in. So Dr. Espinosa and I both serve as the Arizona Medical Association's doc of the day. So I went in January and took two residents with me and talking to legislators. We also just participated in the AZAFP's Emerging Leader Day. Dr. Espinosa and I were down there with five of our residents talking to legislators, talking about important things for the health of our community. And we have two residents involved in the AZAFP's Health Policy Scholar Program, where these two residents will also go to Washington, D.C. for the Advocacy Day in June. Also, this is a really important month for our patients' Medicaid coverage, which is threatened. And so we're going to do an advocacy session at Teaching Half Day about that and how residents can get involved. So please contact your congressperson to tell them how important Medicaid is for our patients. Next, scholarly activity. We have three projects that are going to be presented at the Society of Teachers of Family Medicine, including two medical students and I and a group from Michigan talking about food pantries in family medicine. Three of our residents are going to be there talking about their voting project, where, among other things, we learned that 90% of patients are fine with being asked about voting. in the doctor's office. And thirdly, Dr. Grizzle and Dr. Boltz from Wesley are going to be talking about the incredible resurgence of our continuity OB program. So thank you, everybody, and happy Match March Month.
Dr. Matern, residency program director up in the Payson Rural Training Program. What is going on with the residency program right now?
So like about 5 minutes ago, I submitted our rank list for the NRMP. We have interviewed 32 people and I ranked, 28. I'm pretty excited about our candidates. So hopefully we won't be soaping in a couple of weeks.
Okay. How common is soap for rural training programs?
Pretty common. But we submitted 28 names for two spots, so there's hope.
That sounds pretty good. Yep.
Yeah.
How are the current residents doing?
They're doing really well. They are both in Payson, which they love. I mean, they appreciate their Phoenix rotations, but they love being home in Payson. Mm-hmm. And we are getting ready for our second year. So Tiana, my coordinator, and I are fast and furiously putting together rotation blocks and organizing our away rotations and our specialty rotations up in Payson. So probably they'll be doing dermatology, orthopedics, sports medicine, cardiology, geriatrics, up in Payson this year. And with a smattering of some time at the Payson Christian Clinic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they'll be down in Phoenix for another month of OB and some ICU.
And then I heard that your clinic expansion is started.
Oh, yeah. There's dirt flying, bulldozers pounding. So there's stuff happening over there. That's for sure.
That's cool. So that'll double the size of the residency clinic.
Yeah, I think we gain like 10 more exam rooms, something like that. And there's a precepting area and a couple of offices for like the clinic leadership and the nurse.
Fantastic. Yeah. Thank you so much. Thanks for letting me just grab your time like this.
Awesome. This is fun.
All right.
See you around. Bye.
Jake, give us the updates with the Banner Desert Residency Program. We know it's been a lot of work, but probably pretty exciting to get things set up.
Yeah, it is super exciting to finally be at the point where we're in March, which means it's match time. We get to figure out who our inaugural class of six interns that will start in June will be. And I'm so excited. Like you said, there's been a ton of work by a ton of people leading up into this point for the past 2 years, and this feels like a real important apex, climax, I don't know, of the story of Banner Desert.
How has the interview season gone?
It's been great. It's been really exciting to see, you know, some of the interest that is in the program. It's always an uphill battle when you're a new program to attract applicants. And I think a big credit is due to, U of A College of Medicine, Phoenix Family Medicine Residency, and sort of their national recognition that people knew that a program attached to the U of A CompP was worth checking out. And so we had a lot of excited interest, but there's also a lot of interest in training in the East Valley. There's a lot of people who grew up there who want to end up there. And so a lot of excitement around being able to start the next chapter of their lives training in Mesa.
Wow. Every time I go to Banner Desert, I'm astounded that it hasn't been this academic teaching hospital all this time. It's so big and seems like such a big opportunity.
Yeah, anybody who hears about this and thinks about Banner Desert is, gives me that's a no-brainer because it's such a great hospital serving such a huge community. It's busy, diverse population, diverse pathology. It's really is a like an untapped resource for GME. And so it's exciting to finally be at the point where we're starting both our family medicine program and the internal medicine program this year.
Super. Anything else that you would want to let us know for department updates?
So I think since the last meeting, we've officially had a couple of core faculties start. Albert Shaw, who is a family doc and has been practicing in the East Valley for all of his career, joined us. And then Megan Hunt, who has done a number of different things, including geriatrics, hospitalist. She joined us. She's a graduate of UA CompP Phoenix and the family medicine residency there. And so we're excited. We also will be welcoming our two UA CompP family medicine chiefs after they're done with residency this year. And so Dr. Voy and Dr. Hochstein will be joining us in July. And so we're excited as this team grows about all the possibilities and kind of where everything's going.
That is so exciting.
Yep. This is a great format. Thanks.
Next, we will cover undergraduate medical education, or UME, updates with Dr. Katie Bright in a new role of Associate Dean of Community Engagement, Dr. Jonathan Kartsonis, Director of Rural Health Education, and Dr. Sharzi Sararian, our Clerkship Director and Director of Primary Care Certificate of Distinction. Katie, go ahead and tell us about all the exciting things going on with Office of Community Engagement.
Sure. Thank you. Yeah, we have some exciting stuff happening in the Office of Community Engagement. And for one thing, we're hitting our new academic year for third and fourth year learners. So we're kicking off a new LIC season. That's the Longitudinal Integrated Clerkship. And that lives in the Office of Community Engagement. And those are all happening outside of Phoenix, so rural sites. So we have Payson, Gila River, San Luis, Flagstaff, and Safford as LIC sites, and our students start next week in that, so the middle of March. We also are excited that we're moving along with our three-year accelerated primary care curriculum. I know we've talked about that here before, but I'm working with the provost office to get that approved for our class of 2029. So the group of students we're recruiting now to start in July will be the first class available to apply for that. And we can take up to 10 students this first year. And we're very excited to move that initiative forward for meeting the needs of our city and our state. And then the last thing just to update on is we have some exciting things happening from the admissions and rural health standpoint. So we're still working with the admissions committee to see how going to our next application cycle, we can have more of a focused rural and primary care admissions track to really attract and matriculate the best future primary care workforce and talent from our state. So exciting stuff.
Very exciting. How do you think some of these new strategies will help us get more primary care focused students from the get-go? And what kinds of things do we think have prevented that from happening in the past?
Yeah, I think this specialized admissions committee will make a really big difference, because our admissions committee, like so many medical school admissions committees nationwide, really is focused on metrics that are really designed to matriculate specialists. So focus on things much like research and things that are much more specialty relevant versus things like service learning and things we would look for a strong future primary care physician. So I think those will make a huge difference. Additionally, I think by making sure we're really seeking talent from within Arizona, it will help as well, because we really are working on our Arizona workforce. We know how badly we need physicians across all specialties, but particularly in primary care. So I think focusing on admitting people from here rather than places like California will be another big initiative for our college. So those two things combined should help. And then the three-year curriculum is directly aligned with some of our GME growth. So of our own programs here in Phoenix, but also our programs across the state, small rural programs, since we don't really have any training sites outside of Maricopa and Pima, with the exception of Payson and Flagstaff in primary care, it will really help us continue to grow and nurture that pipeline so that they can be admitted specifically to be in our primary care program and matriculate into our residencies and stay here and practice. So I think they all relate.
That's great. Sounds like we have that kind of figured out, so that will help both attract the students into these primary care rich tracks and keep them in there.
Absolutely. I think even from the very beginning, creating kind of a primary care, you know, society for them to sort of just feel like they belong, as well as being able to be part of the 3-year curriculum or be just part of our traditional 4-year, but feeling like they have a safe space to learn. And then learning throughout urban underserved and, of course, rural sites so that they're very prepared as residents and beyond.
Super. What else do you have going on?
Well, I think you've mentioned some of the things, but a lot of our work is being fueled by grants. So we've been working with the Holly Foundation to help us kind of grow a statewide network. We're calling it Cactus Wren to sort of support our local programs, but also our rural and tribal communities across the state that are getting more and more into medical education and training more of our students so that they can feel connected from a learner standpoint to a faculty development standpoint. And then part of that Holly Foundation investment is also towards growing GME and GME expansion in rural and tribal areas, which is very exciting. And then our HRSA grant is also focused on rural and tribal communities and increasing opportunities for future matriculants across the state to be part of the College of Medicine.
Jonathan Cartsonis, what kind of updates do you have for us?
Well, I've got a couple. We have a new site coming online that's in Safford, Arizona, in southeastern Arizona, with one student and a very motivated team at Mount Graham Regional Medical Center ready to receive him for, if I'm recalling off the top of my head, about a 7-month experience. Long history of teaching over there. They're excited about the model. I think ultimately they would like to develop a small residency program. They have acute on chronic workforce needs, a history of really strong family medicine, family physicians working in that community, and they want to continue that tradition.
Wonderful. I've heard from multiple medical students what a wonderful place that is and how talented the doctors are and how impressive their scope of practice is.
I think you're right about that. I'd like to add that family physician Brad Monteerth is spearheading the effort and is created a really beautiful schedule, calendar for the student to really become immersed in patient care with all the best guidance.
Yeah. All right. So another LIC site for next year. Yeah. What other kinds of things do you have updates for?
Well, so our community engagement team is working on deepening the relationship with Gila River Indian Community and Gila River Healthcare. That's the arm of the community that runs the hospital and the outpatient clinics. Katie Bright and I gave a tour to representatives from Gila River Healthcare. They had meaningful conversations. We could advance this relationship even to a regional branch campus. Really excited about it. Stay tuned. It would be a first in the country, as far as we know, having a regional branch campus on a tribal community. We'll be able to make their priorities come to the fore when creating the curriculum, making sure that it meets the needs of their community and other tribal communities as we train medical students to work in those communities.
So it sounds like it'd be a real partnership.
I think so. So I think those are the highlights. Want to make it quick and tell you the best stuff.
Hi, everyone. This is Sharzi. Wanted to give two updates. For our Primary Care Scholars Certificate of Distinction, our MS1s have officially transitioned out of the program, and most will be joining the Community of Service COD. However, these students will continue with their PC3 preceptors. And I know many of you are serving as PC3 preceptors to these students and also mentoring them. So we appreciate this continued rapport with these students to encourage their primary care interest. And we ask that you continue this mentoring rapport with the remaining students as much as possible so they can meet the graduation requirements for the program. And we hope to continue to encourage these students into primary care residency and obviously eventually primary care careers. We will have a graduation dinner this year on Tuesday, May 6th at 5:30, the location to be determined, but we will send out calendar invites to all of you who are mentoring these MS4s that are soon to graduate from our program.
So hope you can join us. So for the FCPM clerkship, we have officially begun a new academic year. There's a huge overlap in the month of March that we're trying to address and see if we can minimize this overlap. But for some of the sites, might see a increased number of students at your site. I just received new clerkship data and feedback that was compiled and summarized from the Office of Assessment and Evaluation using AI from this past quarter, October 2024 to February 2025, for the clerkship as a whole. So I will be sharing site and faculty feedback at upcoming site visits in the next month or two. You will hear more feedback for your site. Just to sum up our dashboard of feedback for this past quarter, our top five strengths in our clerkship is that we have strong organization and structure, hands-on clinical experience, engaging didactics and learning opportunities, supportive teaching environment, exposure to a broad spectrum of cases. And our top five opportunities that students brought up was lack of continuity of care, of course. Didactics are not always family medicine specific. The topics and the lectures felt too broad. They were wanting more simulation during PPD week. They brought up the issue of PXDX vaccine administration that was impractical and redundant. And they preferred live lectures as opposed to asynchronous lectures. So that concludes their clerkship update for me.
Next, we have some research updates from Dr. Freya Spielberg, our Vice Chair of Research, who is such a good sport with my antics. She did this update while waiting in the airport.
Okay, we have Freya Spielberg, who is in the airport coming back from an AHRQ meeting. Maybe you want to start by telling us a little bit about that.
So there was a one-day meeting for about 100 experts around the country to help AHRQ do strategic planning to improve patient-centered care planning for people with multiple chronic conditions. PCORI helped fund this group. And there's a lot of interesting work that's been done around the country looking at implementing patient-centered care planning. Some of the key components are really making sure you start with knowing what's most important to the individual and then developing a universal care plan in that context. A lot of programs are using community health workers to help patients execute the care plan, to improve education and overcome barriers around the care plan. That's a theme. And there's billing codes now that can be used for that purpose. So there's a lot of discussion about what's the ideal care team now and including that type of individual on the care team. I think there's going to be opportunities potentially in the future. And we still don't know what's going to happen with AHRQ's funding or PCORI's funding, but PCORI does fund some AHRQ activities. And PCORI is, has a different funding stream than NIH and CDC per se. So it may be still a promising area to pursue. And I think there's going to be a real need for looking at how we implement patient-centered care planning in primary care and also what the measures are that we use to determine impact. So there may be opportunities in that area. And it was very interesting to get to see what others are doing around the country. So I think that's it for my update for AHRQ.
Super. Nice. Okay. What other kinds of updates do you have? Or what else should people know about?
Yeah. Well, so the lung cancer screening study finally launched, and we did very well with our systems and getting patients in the first week, and the communication with Nikki around patients who are eligible, who aren't eligible because they're from one of the clinics that weren't randomized. That has gone well. And we did resolve a critical issue, which is if a patient was first identified to be associated with 605, where they're not allowed to have the blood test for lung cancer screening because it was a control clinic, but then later they show up in 500, they can get a kit. So anybody that walks in the door of 500 that needs it, we can get a kit for. I think it will be really interesting to see how, you know, the patients respond to this having this test as a possible option. And then, of course, looking at the follow-up to see if we actually improve actual identification and routing patients into treatment earlier. So congrats to everyone for doing a great job getting this off the ground. And if you ever are confused by it, need any help, I've got all of these brochures and workflows on my desk in 500. Also, you know, you can just reach out to me or Nikki by Teams and we'll clarify anything. But it's our first PBRN study and it's exciting.
That's exciting. Maybe, yeah.
Why would we be doing a lung cancer screening blood test when, you know, the CT scan is what the U.S. Preventive Service Task Force recommends? Why should we go about doing this as an academic?
The idea behind this is I see the lung cancer screening test being associated with the low-dose CT as the FIT test is associated with colonoscopy. There, you know, the rates of adhering to the Preventive Task Force guidelines on lung cancer screening are atrocious nationwide. And part of that is in, you know, barriers around workflow, barriers in decision support not being built into the IT systems, but also because it's more of a burden on the patient to make an appointment for the CT scan and follow through. So the no-show rates or the non-follow-through is fairly high for those orders that are done. And so with the blood test, they can get the blood drawn in the same time and place as they get their other blood drawn. And then we know that with that blood draw, if it's negative, actually, the negative predictive value is quite high. So it's very unlikely that they have a lung cancer. You know, the FIT testing, they may not want to do a colonoscopy, but if it's positive, they're much more likely to follow through with a colonoscopy. And I believe we'll see the same thing with the lung cancer screening blood test. So more people screened, more people identified early. That's the goal.
That makes sense. Yeah. Any other updates? I know you have submitted a large number of grants.
I would say the existing grants are still out there. The good news is we haven't gotten any no's yet, and we're just, you know, waiting to see what happens with funding and if the initiatives that we applied for are even still available. And sometime this spring, so before summer, we're supposed to hear on several of the grants that we submitted. The ones that I'm working on now, well, we have the HRSA Street Medicine Residency Training Initiative, which isn't really research, but I think of it as being really important and setting up the infrastructure that we need to partner with the other organizations in Phoenix that are doing street medicine, improve kind of the quality of care that we deliver. Then we can start doing quality improvement research and really improve health outcomes for this population. So it's in the grand scheme, it makes sense. And that goes in later in March. And then we're also working on a big idea initiative across all of the university, including people from, you know, many, many different schools, that will be a university-funded grant to support the groundwork and meeting time that needs to be done to develop grants. And in this case, we're looking at heat and health resilience, our research efforts. And then the other grant that I just met on that is also going in soon is a collaboration with two faculty in Tucson, a sociologist and a behavioralist researcher, but they're in the family medicine department in Tucson. And we are looking to implement improving care management and outcomes for people with opioid use disorder by integrating peer navigators into the care teams. And so I think hopefully we'll be able to tap into some of the opioid use disorder funding and really improve the care for those patients. And that's kind of a work in progress as we design and implement.
These are some great updates. So thank you so much. I think I was able to hear you over all the airport.
Okay, last two updates, and thank you for hanging in there. We have first up Dr. Taylor Young, our Director of Behavioral Health Education, and Dr. Jenna Buchanan, Vice Chair of Clinical Affairs.
So, Taylor Young, how many months have you been with the residency program in the department?
So I have been here officially since August 12th, I think. So that's about 7 or 8 months now in March.
Wow, time flies. Uh-huh. Okay. What kind of updates do you think you'd like to give about behavioral health and kind of the bigger picture of integrating behavioral health into the family community and preventive medicine department?
Yeah, of course. I think it's one of the more exciting updates is that the warm handoffs and some of the co-visits kind of initiatives are really taking, getting some steam. So especially in Clinic 500, a lot of the NPs and PAs, a lot of the providers down there have asked for us a lot, like me and Abby and Deborah, for both psychotherapy and also COCM, but also just patients that say, hey, I don't know if I feel comfortable asking for help or asking for certain support. And just supporting patients in that way as well. So we saw an uptick in January. I think there was like 20 attempts for warm handoffs. And we got to do like 10 to 14 of them. And so that's growing. Also for Deborah's COCM warm handoffs, it's also growing as well. So that's a really exciting thing. I hope the momentum keeps going. I hope some of the residents kind of catch on as well. They've been asking me for co-visits, but the warm handoffs, I think, would be awesome as well.
Okay. So people in the clinic, there are instructions and email on how to message that team when you want to do a warm handoff. Is that right?
Yep. Laminated all of the different work flow sheet that we have that says like, hey, here's like a decision tree for kind of how you think about a warm handoff, when to initiate one, and then the different avenues. So if we're not around or you don't want to go to us in person, the team's message is probably the best thing to do. And then if none of us are available, just sending a server message to the pool.
Super. What else do you want to tell people about behavioral health, integrated care, some of your like maybe broader goals and aspirations in this work?
So getting student social workers, student marriage and family therapists, and even some psychologists, if there's a route to that. Just to be able to create better access to services in general for our patients. Really the biggest thing is like space, like where do we put them? Abby's kind of taken the lead on getting us as a placement spot for ASU's MSW program. And we actually have our first student MSW that is interested. So we will interview her in April and we'll probably have a couple more and they'll start in fall. So they will be doing stuff like traditional therapy as well, warm handoffs and co-visits with supervision from me and Abby. They'll also be doing some stuff with Candace, and they might be diving into some group work as well. So I'm really excited about that because I think that can grow our team. And then outside of that, I think it's really my heart and kind of where my PhD lies is expanding behavioral health access in a way that is really an access model. So being able to say, hey, we're helping people getting connected to behavioral health resources and more students. You know, I think one of my dreams and visions is as a behavioral health team, kind of expanding access for patients in general and making really kind of a team approach to access as well. Like, we're not just therapists that do traditional therapy, but we're, you know, providers and a behavioral health team that helps patients get what they need, whether that is therapy with us or therapy with a community therapist, or whether it is just, hey, let's make a team-based treatment plan with you, your PCP, maybe the navigation nurse, maybe the PharmD as well. And sometimes that's kind of all patients need, specifically for like their health goals or their primary care concerns. And also kind of those like different motivation pieces, whether it's diabetes or whether it's heart issues or whether it's anxiety, where they just need kind of a, hey, this is my plan, this is what we're going to do, and I just need a little bit of support to do that. And so we're growing that. We call it the access model, not the insurance, the actual word. The access model of saying, hey, we want to increase access for all patients and not just be limited to giving a lot of services to a small amount of patients. Services, this dynamic of warm handoffs, co-visits, being able to kind of go into the room with the provider, checking in with them after the PCP visit or before, mixed with psychotherapy and COCM, kind of gears towards that. Me and Abby are kind of building our like style up to where like we are going to be just like the PCP as far as like a generalist. So being able to say, hey, we don't need a 15-minute consult. We don't need to call the patient before time. You can just put them on our schedule once our schedule gets templated, and we can just see them. And then we can reach out to you and kind of coordinate and say, hey, this is what we worked on. This is how it connects to your primary care goals. But outside of those, we're trying to say, hey, just put them on our schedule and we will kind of navigate the way that they need behavioral support along with your support as the medical provider as well.
Super. So how do you see some of this work, that you're doing touch our GME expansions or students that rotate with us, the primary care track students?
Yeah, I think as it grows and as we get more robust and more just people, I think even just the avenue of making electives. I know that maybe an elective for the medical students that kind of come in, maybe it's a month-long elective where they shadow me, they shadow Abby, they come in for COCM, they come in with Candace, and they do a lot of kind of like, hey, what is behavioral health in primary care? Not just what is behavioral health, what is behavioral health in primary care? What does it look like? Hopefully a system that works for all of us. And they can see that, and then they can see the flexibility. It doesn't have to be one size fits all. You can kind of cater towards your clinic, cater towards a setting, whether it's rural or city elective. And then as far as kind of the department, start with Phoenix and really solidify this team. And then taking this flexible model and emphasis on the flexi part of it and saying, hey, can we expand it to the other residencies? And that way they're taking full advantage of a team, what works for your clinic. So if that makes sense.
That makes sense. So fantastic.
Yeah, cool.
Jenna, what kind of updates do you have for clinical affairs?
So I think in the last few months, we've really had a significant push towards kind of adopting some value-based care approaches, utilizing tools within our EHR to help us capture significant diagnoses or codes that may have impact for our patients' RAF scoring. Along with this, we're also working with our Banner kind of broader team and the Banner Plans and Network team to get patients into our clinic more frequently, have more frequent touch points, not just with their providers, but also with our broader kind of multidisciplinary care team, encouraging patients to come in early in the year for their annual wellness visits and really leveraging our population health team members to help us perform this outreach to get patients connected with the care that they need.
It seems like everything has changed so much in our outpatient clinics. So what do you think about all these changes in the value-based care? Is this something that is good, or is this something that's not good or overwhelming?
You know, I think right now it's a bit of a challenge because we're still kind of straddling how we've always traditionally provided care for patients, and then doing the value-based care kind of on top of that, I think seems like a big shift and a big adoption. I think we all recognize the importance and the need to kind of focus on preventive care for our patients. Keeping patients safe and out of the hospital, keeping them connected with their primary care doctors is essential and how we provide really good care for our patients. So I think on one hand, we really see that this is a significant and very important trend, but you know, there's a lot of challenges with changing how we've done things and adoption of new tools and how do we work better and more effectively as a team to make sure that we do all the things that we need to do kind of from a clinic standpoint to provide the care that needs to be done.
Yeah, I see that. It seems like when a long time ago, when I was a resident, a lot of the training was like learn how to see a lot of patients really fast and do diagnosis and treatment plan. And then quality was a good thing, but we started adding quality. But right now, it seems like everybody's just kind of stressed with like wanting to have good, high quality, but then also needing to like be able to provide access in all those patient care visits. What thoughts do you have about that as an academic department?
I think you're exactly right. And I think you bring up a really important point, which is that we still have patients who need to be seen. And so there's that challenge of getting patients in, the access, kind of limitations with the amount of time that we have for patients, wanting to make sure that we address their concerns, but then also really focusing on how do we address their health maintenance and their quality metrics and their preventive care all at the same time. And so I think that becomes, to your point, very stressful. And particularly for our residents who are in this learning environment, still learning how to care for patients and doing this while kind of juggling rotations can be really stressful. And I think that really points to like our efforts with Lean Process Committee and clinical efficiency. How do we work better as a team? How do we improve our workflows so that we can do all of these things that our patients need to the best of our abilities? And so there's been a lot of shift as we're working on kind of this transition to value-based care, kind of concurrently also working on improving our clinical efficiency.
What do you see as important work for specifically these new residency programs, you know, like up in Payson, out in Banner Desert, as we're getting into other parts of Banner and as the department's, you know, expanding out? What are some things that you're thinking about?
I think we have a really unique opportunity given the size of our practice, a lot of lessons learned over the last few years as we've expanded the team. And I think we really want to become a model for how to leverage all of the different team members, whether that's our clinical, clerical staff, our interdisciplinary care team members, and have people kind of own their workflows, create standard works so that we can continue to evolve and continue to improve as kind of the landscape and medicine changes. And I think really trying to be a model for like, how do we take a process that may not currently work on it, improve it, roll it out, operationalize it, and then revisit it to see like, is this truly how we want this workflow? Is it designed to do what we intended it for it to do?
That's great. And maybe the residents participating in that, that's something that they can like learn and bring to their work after residency.
I think that's really important, is really giving them the tools for like, how can they effectively impact change in a way that feels like it's meaningful to the work that they're doing day in, day out. And I think what better place to start than here where we have that opportunity.
Yeah. Okay. Last funny question that I have for you. What is your favorite thing about your clinical work?
I think there's a couple of different things, and I think it's the relationships that you build with patients, you know. And I think it's pretty incredible to think back to seeing patients in residency, and some of these patients are still, you know, with me today, kind of that longitudinal relationship, and how the, you know, the visits change over time, and a lot of them include kind of a lot more social aspects, which is very fun. But then I also really appreciate the colleagues that I work here with. And I feel like we work in such a supportive environment. It's a wonderful team that I think is really open to collaboration. And I couldn't think of a better place to work.
And that concludes our virtual audio-only asynchronous department updates. I hope you found it informational and interesting and could listen to it in your car. If you haven't seen our 2024 annual update, elegantly pulled together by Leah Hillier, please see it on our website. Remember, we have the Arizona Academic Family Medicine Innovation Conference, also called AFMIC, and the Residency Fair on April 4th. And we have the annual Department Dinner and Awards on May 9th at 6 p.m. at the University Club in Phoenix. Please take care, everyone.